Warning, this episode contains discussion surrounding religion, addiction, drug use, and other sensitive topics. Listener discretion is advised.
So he passed me his watch and she goes, hold that in your hands and close your eyes. So I did. And she goes, what do you see? And I said, fire. I see fire. And I looked at him and I said, your best friend died in a fire. And everybody just, their mouths dropped. And it was shocking even for me because he was like, yeah, you're absolutely dead on. My best friend died in a fire.
Welcome to Something Paranormal. I am your host, Alisa Marley, where the curious come to learn about all things supernatural. I just wanted to start out by saying how much I appreciate every single one of you that tune in to listen each week. We are almost at 500 downloads for the lifetime of this podcast. Now, of course, compared to other people out there, that's still pretty small, but I am still grateful and thankful for every single one of you. Have you wondered what happens to your loved ones when they pass? Are you thirsty for a ghost story? I'm curious if you think my guest this week is psychic or a medium. I'm going to task you this week. If you feel like this guest has gifts that she hasn't tapped into fully, send me a message on any of my platforms like Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok. I'm always looking for new guests, and I do have a gem for you today. I honestly feel like everything happens for a reason, and as the story progresses this week, you'll understand why we are so connected. Sherry reached out to me on Facebook and I was blown away by her story of paranormal experiences, loss, and her abilities. Stay tuned for the chat with Sherry. Okay, so thank you so much for reaching out. I've been dying all week just to hear about your paranormal stories.
I love talking about them, so this is really exciting for me because anybody that will listen to them has already heard them over and over and over again. So
right.
This is great. Yeah. This is new and it's great. I love this subject. So
okay, perfect. Yeah. So when was the first time you experienced something paranormal?
That's really hard to say because I've been experiencing things since I can remember. For instance, I remember as far back as like 3 years old when my parents were still together. They split up when I was 4. So living in that house at around, 3 years old, for years and years later, like I didn't even really know if it was a real memory or if it was a dream. It turns out it was a dream, but it was a recurring dream of a Scotsman running around outside in our yard all the time. And like, I'd be standing at the window and really freaked out that this man is running around our yard looking for me and things like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I had that dream a lot. And a couple of years ago, my dad moved to Central America and he let me take a bunch of pictures. He had all these pictures and he let me go through them. And I found a photo of that man.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, who is this? And he's like, oh, that's your great, great uncle or something. My dad's Scottish, right? His mm-hmm. family's from Scotland. And yeah, even to talk to my parents or my family about this kind of stuff never really happened a lot. You know what I mean? Especially with my mom, she didn't like that kind of stuff. It really freaked her out. So mm-hmm. I was one of those kids that were, you know, I didn't know what was going on and nobody believed me anyways. So it was traumatizing, really.
Yeah.
So my mom and dad split up when I was four. She left the house. It was a very dysfunctional. My mother was a really bad alcoholic and she could be a tyrant. We were all very frightened of her. She did a lot of damage to us. Mm-hmm. In any case, back in those days, the father never had custody rights. Right back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So I just went with her and we moved into a one bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. And she had a single bed. I had a single bed. The wall directly in front of me was a full length mirror. So my next experience that I remember is now they have separated. We're in this apartment. And one night I woke up to this woman calling my name and she's going, Sherry, Sherry, Sherry. And I woke up and I looked over at my mom's bed and my mom's in bed sleeping. And I'm like, I'm confused, right? Like I sit up and I'm sitting there and I'm listening. And she's like, come here, come out here. So I get up and I wander around our apartment. She's like, no, come in the kitchen, come in the living room. No, in the bathroom. Like, so I'm wandering around the apartment like, well, where are you? Where are you? Mm-hmm. I'm saying, and she goes, go back to bed. So I go back to bed. I lay down and I look at the mirror in front of me, and there is this woman.
Wow.
And to this day, I even remember what she was wearing. The fabric was corduroy, both with her shirt and her pants were corduroy. Really wild stuff. She was, I don't want to say like a witch, but you kind of got the feeling she was sinister. Mm-hmm. She's kind of creepy looking. And it's very strange for me to say this right now, but when I look back at it now, she looked like me now.
Really?
Only in a creepier, sinister, creepy me.
Wow.
It's the hair, I think. I have when my hair is down, it's really thick and wavy and kind of curly and messy. And that's how I would describe her, as me now, only creepier.
Right. Do you think she might have been like a relative, or she like literally was like a doppelganger of you?
See, and that's the thing. I just don't know, right? Like there's these theories where we live in parallel universes. What if it was me actually coming to scare the crap out of me? Like, I don't know, right? You know, this is the thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing to think back on it and go like, gosh, you know, she sure looked like me, mm-hmm. only really kind of creepy and sinister.
Weird.
So then the next memory I have is we moved out of that apartment into another apartment, different suburb, two bedroom. I have my own room and I was seven sleeping. It's the middle of the night as usual. I sat straight up in bed and I looked at my door and this shadow woman, same hair, but a shadow, is standing in my doorway and just wow. standing there staring at me. And it sounds really stupid, but I stuck my tongue out at her. And she went around the corner, which is where my mom's room was. She just sort of slipped away. And I got up and ran into my mother's room. And I flicked on the light as I was going in. And I jumped in her bed. And I'm going, Mom, Mom, there's a woman in my room. And I'm like, I'm freaking out. Mm-hmm. She's like, calm down, calm down. And all of a sudden, there she was standing in my mom's doorway, this shadow, even with the light on. And I'm like, there she is, there she is. My mother screamed. We both went under the covers. And I literally slept with my mother for months after that.
So she saw the entity as well?
You know, I don't know if she really looked, because I just, as soon as I said, there she is, my mother just cowered and went under the covers and hid.
Okay. Wow.
My mother was very, very freaked out about stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. but she did let me stay in a room and sleep with her for months. Mm-hmm. And then when I wasn't in her room sleeping, I could hear people underneath my bed whispering all the time. They're just whispering and I could make out certain words, not everything, but they're under there and they're whispering and they're talking. And one time my mom and my aunt had sent me to bed. They were in the living room talking and I'm in bed and I'm just like laying there listening to them talk out in the living room. And I feel this poking at my shoulder with like sharp nails poking in my shoulder. Like I hadn't even fallen asleep. I was just laying there listening to them. Mm-hmm. And so I felt her. It's always been a woman. And I feel like it's the same woman. And yeah, because I could hear men's voices that she was conversing with as well, when I'd hear the whispering. Gosh, there's just been so much of it. It stopped when I was 12. A bunch of my girlfriends and I got together and we would play with the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And my mom had this picture hanging in her living room and nothing really happened, you know, with us using the Ouija board or anything like that. But I started staring at that picture all the time. And I would stare at it so long that she'd start to move. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to feel about any of it. I'm quite, you know, still to this day, I don't know, like, am I wired differently? Mm-hmm. A parapsychologist or whatever would say, well, you're just maybe wired differently. And that's why some people see this stuff and some people don't. But in my heart, that's not what I believe. Mm-hmm. I believe maybe it's trauma. Maybe just some are born with it and in tune and some are not. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it followed me around, not necessarily her, I think, because I sort of grew out of being able to see that. But like I say, with the picture and stuff, my mom got really angry and she threw the picture out. And then I just sort of, I don't know, nothing happened. You know, things sort of calmed down until I got a little bit older in my teens. And then I started dreaming about the devil all the time. The devil, the devil, the devil. Mm-hmm. The devil was never like a scary monster guy. It was a feeling all the time. It could just be me looking outside the window in my dream and hearing the wind chimes and knowing he's there. Very, very frightening to me. For right. years that went on throughout my teens, my 20s, and then probably my late 20s. Yeah, late 20s, early 30s. I actually went to a psychic and told her I have these really disturbing devil dreams. And she told me what to do to get rid of them. And it worked. And since then, I've only had maybe one or two of him.
What did she tell you to do to like stop that?
She told me to face him. She said, the next time you dream about him, you need to face him and you need to ask him, like, what do you want? Like, you need to get out of here and you need to get out of my life. So the next time I dream of him, it's really funny, actually. I dreamt I was in Las Vegas. I'd never been to Las Vegas at that time, but I dreamt I was in Las Vegas and I went to this hotel and there was a bunch of celebrities in the lobby and they were doing a fundraising for me to get rid of him.
Oh.
So he wanted something like, I think it was like $136,000 for me to leave me alone. But I think we came up with 98,000 or some weird number like that. And I took it up. He was in the penthouse and I knocked on the door, came to the door and I said, it's not all of it, but here's a big chunk.
Right.
There you go. Can you just leave me alone now? And he just sort of, yeah, you know, whatever kind of thing. And that was it. That was it.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Years and years of torture. And then just to do that, like it just didn't make any sense to me. It still doesn't make sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. So what was that from? Is that also from trauma? Like, you know, what is the meaning of him? Because for a long time, I thought really the devil was trying to get to me.
Right.
And maybe he was. I don't know.
Yeah. Was that like the last time anything like that happened?
With the devil? Mm-hmm. With the devil, I had a couple of dreams that I don't really remember. They were nothing really that significant, I don't think. I've had a lot of night terrors and things like that. Like I would dream of spiders and snakes and Freddy Krueger and, you know, things like that. So always having nightmares all the time. I met this girl when I was about 15 or 16 years old. Back in those days, her mom actually was a very well-known psychic. She had her own radio time and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I met this girl and she brought me home one day and introduced me to her mother. And her mother looked at me and her mother said, you have a gift. And I'm like, what? What is this woman talking about? Like, okay, this is weird. I don't know you people. Now I'm uncomfortable and awkward. Mm-hmm. And my friend that brought me there to meet her family had just started seeing this new boyfriend. I never met him. I didn't know anything about him, whatever. So everybody's sitting at the table and her mom says, sit down. And I sat down and she says to the boyfriend, give Sherry your watch. So he passed me his watch and she goes, hold that in your hands and close your eyes. So I did. And she goes, what do you see? And I said, fire. I see fire. And I looked at him and I said, your best friend died in a fire. And everybody just, their mouths dropped. And it was shocking even for me because he was like, yeah, you're absolutely dead on. My best friend died in a fire. So after that, I kind of knew I had some kind of connection. I would have premonition dreams and I had a premonition about my aunt dying. You know, dreams are never of exactly what's going to happen. It's like metaphoric.
Yeah, or like distorted. Yeah.
I have to figure it out. It's sort of like a little puzzle I have to figure out, but it does happen. It still happens to this day. I don't practice this kind of stuff. It just happens. I hear them. I smell them. You know, I'll meet somebody and they're just talking to me and all I can envision is different things about them. I'll see like the house that they lived in or, you know, things like that. I've astral traveled before.
What?
Yes, I know that for a fact because I didn't really know what it was at the time. I had never really read up on it or any of that. But I used to have these dreams where they're so intense that you almost know that it's not a dream almost. It's so powerful. And I kept having these dreams that I could fly, mm-hmm. you know, and I concentrate and all of a sudden I take off and I'm flying and I'm just having this great time. It's just such an incredible feeling. And one time in my dream, so I thought it was a dream and maybe it was, maybe I didn't actually astral travel. Maybe it was just a premonition or some kind of connection. I'm not sure, but my cousin's husband is from Portugal and I didn't really know him that well. And I phoned Amy one morning and I said, I had a dream last night. I dreamt about Arnold's grandmother's house in Portugal. And I described the house to a T and it completely tripped Arnold right out. Like he's like, that is my grandmother's house. I just explained that's her house.
Wow.
So, you know, it's there, it's happening, it still happens to this day, but sort of in and out, you know, years would sort of pass for nothing, and then things would start. So I had my first son really young. I was like 3 days before I turned 18, I had my first son. That's a whole different story. So he actually passed away in 2015, late 2015. From fentanyl poisoning.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Now, working up to that, years later, I got married again. 18 years later, I had a second child with a different man, a man that I married, and we had a life together, two kids. When I had Seth, my second, we moved into this house. And in the nighttime, like he would go to bed, I'd put the baby to bed. I'd be sitting up watching TV. I'm not much of a sleeper. I've been suffering from insomnia for a long, long time. So I just like relax on the couch and put on a movie, a spooky movie, or, you know, like ghost hunting stuff or whatever. And all of a sudden, I had like a ton of hanging plants in my living room. We had such a huge living room and I was really into it at the time. The plants would start spinning and spinning and spinning. And then all of a sudden the baby would wake up just screaming, crying. And that was an odd thing for a few months at that time. And then, you know, everything slowed down again. Not much in the way of spirit so much, but like I had a situation one time, my husband was at work. I was at home. It was summertime and it was really, really hot. So I was lying in our bed in the bedroom with the fan and on and stuff like that. And I was watching TV and all of a sudden I look and my husband is bending down and he's going into the dresser and he's looking at me, he's smiling just for a split second. He's standing there smiling at me. Like you start to think like, am I going nuts? Like what happened? But I've heard of that happening now. Like there you go once again in the parallel dimension, like all of a sudden he's there. He's just standing there for a moment, bending down, smiling at me, almost as though we were in the midst of a conversation.
Right.
Really weird things like that. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 2007, we split up and we're sharing custody with the kid. And we lived very close to one another when I moved out. And I ended up moving into this townhouse. And that was the darkest probably time. I was there for about 10 years. That place was dark and you could feel it. You could literally feel the heaviness of this place. Mm-hmm. I would be downstairs alone, living room, watching TV. Kids would be at their dad's and I can hear the floorboards upstairs in between my daughter's room and my room creaking. She had a floorboard in her room that would creak. And then one right outside of her door that would creak every time you walked upstairs. I can hear people walking around up there and creak, 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 creak. And I even had my girlfriend came to stay with me for a while. And we'd be sitting there watching a movie. And all of a sudden, you can hear them walking around and creaking around. And I mean, I'm like, get up there. Go see what's going on. She'd be no happy way. It's just crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. My mom came and my stepdad came. They were living up in Cache Creek and they came down a couple times to stay with me. And both times my mother had an experience.
Wow.
And she was sleeping in my daughter's room where the creaking is. Mm-hmm. And she said she didn't sleep at all because she just sat in the bed frozen with fear because that floorboard, it was like somebody was walking back and forth and back and forth. And that floorboard was squeaking.
Wow.
And then another time she came and she said, I'm not going to sleep upstairs. I'm going to sleep downstairs on your couch. And that time she said somebody was breathing in her ear.
Oh my gosh.
And she said she'll never, ever come and stay at my house again. And they never did. They would always get a motel or a hotel, or she wouldn't stay in my house.
Wow.
That place, knocking on my bedroom door constant knocking on my bedroom door all the time. Now my kids, who are 6 and 7, maybe, I'm not sure, but my son started having problems and he kept running in my room and saying, there's people in the closet. I can hear them whispering. So he's constantly climbing into bed with me and the people in the closet. And so I ended up switching my daughter's room and his room. And I thought, well, maybe if I just switch their rooms, maybe it's my TV.
Yeah.
He's, thinking it's somebody in the closet or something. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. Well, so I switched and that was it for my daughter. And my daughter used to sleep like the dead, literally like the dead. She had sleep apnea and she used to sleep with her eyes open. Mm-hmm. So, you'd literally go in there from the time she's a baby and check on her and she'd just be eyes open, not breathing. So I was always waking up the baby, all the time. She slept like the dead. As soon as I switched their rooms, that was over. She's like, there's people in the closet. There's people in the closet. I can hear them. I can hear them. There's people in the closet. So she ended up sleeping with me until she was almost 13.
Wow.
Because it scared her so bad. Mm-hmm. One night, I don't know where she was. Now we've been there a few years. It's rampant. The knocking, the footsteps, the creaking, them constantly complaining about the whispering. And even with me, the knocking was driving me insane. It'd be in the middle of the night and I think it was the kids and I'd be like, come in, come in.
Yeah.
Nobody's there. They're in bed. They're passed out. They're sleeping. Mm-hmm. I don't know where she was this night. She maybe had a girlfriend because we did live in a complex and all the kids grew up with other kids there. And so there was a lot of sleepovers at my house, other people's house. And so this was one night that I was lucky enough to have the bed to myself.
For once.
All of a sudden, my son comes barreling in through the door and he's like, they're in my room. They're here. They're here. They're in my room. And I couldn't move.
Oh my God.
I couldn't move my body. I was paralyzed. And that's not the first time that's happened to me, but this was the scariest time because he was so freaked out and I couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I couldn't hold them. I couldn't. All I could manage to do is just say, it's okay. It's okay. I won't let anything happen to you. Meanwhile, I can't move.
Right.
I'm trying so hard. I remember looking at my hand and trying so hard just to grab him, but I couldn't. We did manage to he grabbed my hand and, we're holding hands, but I could not move, period. I was just paralyzed. It's mm-hmm. the scariest feeling I've ever had. So the next day at some point, I said, what happened last night? Let's sit down. Let's talk about this. What happened?
Right.
He said he woke up. They're all talking. They're all there. And he goes, and then I came into your room and they were all in your room. And I said, who was in my room? He goes, all these people. And I go, well, what did they look like? And he goes, they were all shadows. and there was lots of them because there was 7 of them. Mm-hmm. One there, a couple there, you know, one over there. And I go, okay, so they were all shadows. He goes, all of them except the lady sitting on your bed.
Oh my God.
So, you know, you've heard of the theory of the witch that sits on you, that sleep paralysis, right? A scientist would say that that's nonsense. But when he said they were all shadow people except for the lady sitting on your bed, I knew he's not making this up. This is for real.
Well, especially with your history, right?
With her, mm-hmm. the woman, mm-hmm. right? And I said, okay, so what did she look like? He says, actually, at first I thought she was kind of funny. I kind of laughed at her because she was smiling and, you know, she was looking kind of funny. He says, but the way her head was moving around really creeped me out. He yeah. said it was really creepy. And he described her to me, not quite exactly the same, but a woman nevertheless, mm-hmm. sitting on my bed.
That's crazy.
Laughing and smiling and then all these shadow people.
Wow.
So that was trippy.
Yeah. What a ride.
Right? That was a little much. Now, I remember being literally woken up by banging on my bedroom window. Bang, 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 bang. It's like 5:36 in the morning. Bang, 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 bang. Well, to get to my bedroom window, you need a ladder. I jumped right out of bed. I didn't go to the bedroom window because it freaked me out too bad. I went right around the corner to my bathroom window and looked out. Nothing there.
Oh my gosh.
I shut the bathroom window. I walk back in my bedroom. Bang, 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 bang. Again, just that kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to fast forward then to 2014, living with this year after year, all this nonsense going on, you know, me trying to get smudging and doing all this stuff and nothing working, nothing. So my son, my oldest son, was living in Langley at the time. And like I said, he was suffering from addiction. It's a whole long sort of story in itself, how all that went down. But he was also really fascinated with the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And I think it's had to do with a girlfriend of mine. When he was about 5 years old, she committed suicide. And he kept saying to the fireman, I have to go pee. I have to go pee. I kept telling him, just go sit in the car, go sit in the car, because I knew he just wanted to see what was going on. Right. And she was there dead. I found her. So he convinced this fireman to let him in the house so he could go pee. And of course, she's lying there dead. Right. And ever since then, I think it really did something to him. And he was fascinated with the paranormal. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, so is his mother. So I probably should have done a better job of deterring him away from that kind of darkness, but I didn't. And yeah, he had a fascination with the paranormal and the other side. So in 2014, it was Christmas time. They had changed the methadone program. He was on the methadone program and they changed it. So it was 10 times stronger and he got scared and said, I don't want to be part of the program anymore because I don't want to die on this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was spending a lot of time at my house at this time. And mainly because, you know, I was really concerned and he would go through these horrible depressions and he wouldn't answer the phone. And so I'd have to get in the car and drive all the way there, you know, all the way back. You know, I've got 2 little kids. I'm working downtown. You know, it was so overwhelming for me to have to keep driving over there. So I convinced him to move out of that place and come home for a while. Get your shit together. Mm-hmm. Got us. We love you. And we're going to get through this together. All the rest of it. That was a bad move on my part. I never should have done that. Within a year, he was dead.
I'm so sorry.
And I think that house had something to do with the final push kind of thing. I think there was something really, really dark in that house. Mm-hmm. I went through a few overdoses with him where I had to resuscitate him myself and keep him alive. So by the time he did pass away, so he passed away in November of 2015, so less than a year, because he moved in with me in December 2014 actually moved his stuff out of his other house in January. So within, you know, 11 months kind of thing of being with us in that house, he had 3 overdoses.
Wow.
Where I found him and had to resuscitate him. And one time he did die. So he had a near-death experience.
Oh, wow.
And we talked about that. I used to have this theory, like I used to keep telling him, you got to stop this. If you die like this, where is your soul going to go? Like, I kind of had this theory that if you died of drugs and you chose that kind of lifestyle and that's how you're going to go down, then you might not make it to heaven, like, you kind of thing. It's kind of naive, right? So I asked him, I said, do you remember anything when you died? And he goes, oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. And I said, what happened? He said, I came to a tunnel made of skulls, human bones and skulls. And inside the tunnel was a whole bunch of doors on each side. All these doors. It was very dark and there was all these doors inside and everything was made of skulls and bones and whatnot. And I'm like, you see, the devil's trying to steal your soul and blah, blah, blah. And he said, no, Mom. He says, that's not the impression that I got. And I go, what was your impression? He goes, I think it was God trying to show me something. And I was like, wow, like, okay, that's quite a concept. Now, Brad was far more educated in everything than I was. He knew all about different religions and cultures. He'd go to different churches. He was very into Aleister Crowley, I think it is his name, Aleister Crowley. He's like a big Satan worshiper guy, very popular, well-known. And he knew a lot about like Satanism as opposed to devil worshiping and those kind of things. That's why I say, you know, earlier I should have deterred him from this kind of interest because he really delved into it. When he died, that's when it was crazy. It was like stuff that you would see on the movie. So I get a phone call. At the time, he was going in and out of the hospital to have intravenous antibiotics. He had a really bad infection in his leg. Part of the reason why he was addicted, he got in an accident at work. He snapped his leg basically in half. He had to have a bunch of steel rods put in and all this stuff. Of course, they had him doped up for years on Oxycontin and opioids, and then all of a sudden cut him off. Right. Here, go on the methadone program. So that's how all of that kind of went down. Right. And then he didn't want to be on the program because he was afraid he was going to die. So he started just going out in the street and meeting people and seeing if they had some Oxycontin or something, you know, to get them through the day or whatever. And every time it was poisoned with fentanyl. Anyway, the fourth and last time he overdosed, the third time at my house, and they managed to Narcan him out of it right away the third time. And I was so distraught. Like, I was so traumatized by this time. This is 3 times in 5 months. My poor kids are witnessing this stuff. And they wanted to take him to the hospital for the 24-hour, you know, make sure he's okay. And he refused. And I said, if you refuse, you can pack your shit and get out right now. Mm-hmm. Like, just leave. I'm done. So he did. He left. And it was November, so it was cold and dark and raining. And the only reason that he was even there in the first place is because I had gotten him into treatment. The system let me down by digging up an old bench warrant for him. That's a long story because when he overdosed the other 2 times, I would go to the police and say, please pick him up from the hospital. Buy me some time so I can get him in a treatment center. They failed me. They didn't pick him up. They didn't show up. They never followed up. Finally get him into a treatment center. 5 weeks later, as he's just starting to do really, really well, they phone me and say, where's Brad? I go, he's in treatment. Why? Well, we want to take care of this old bench warrant. I'm like, no, no, you're not. You're going to leave him alone and I'm going to bring him to you when he's done his program. Because if you take him out of there right now, he's going to go in front of a judge. The judge is going to slap his wrist and say, don't do that again. And then let him out to his war zone.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. They made him leave, sent him back down to the mainland instead of letting him stay up at the country that I had him in, because the facilitator there said, okay, we'll take him to court and make them release him back into our custody. So they took him into the court. The court said, no, he's going back to the mainland where the warrant was initiated. And that was it. We lost him. They let him out and he thought, hallelujah, I'm free. And like I said, he had another overdose. And I said, that's it. So he was staying up at the Sally Ann. And I knew one of the girls that worked there. And she phoned me. He would still come and visit me. He was only gone for maybe, I don't know, 10 days maybe. He was out there. Mm-hmm. And he'd come and visit me. And it was the most heartbreaking thing I've ever been through my whole entire life, to know my baby is out there on the streets and I can't let him in. Because everybody kept saying to me, you got to have tough love. You got to have tough love. You have to do this. You have to do this. Well, don't ever believe that. Never, ever. I'll never give that kind of advice to anybody. Anyway, she phoned me. She said he has a really bad infection in his leg. Sherry, he might lose his leg. So he came to see me and I had made him lunch and I sat him down and I said, I want to see your leg. Roll up your pants. And he said, no. And I said, roll up your pants. So he did. And I just about fell over. And I got down on my hands and knees in front of him. And on his legs, I just begged him. I prayed and I begged him. And I said, please, please, please stop this. I just knew. I had already phoned my mom. I said, Mom, we're going to lose him. We're going to lose him. And she said, don't put that in the universe, blah, blah, blah. And I said, just come home and stay home. But if you're going to stay home, you have to sleep in my bed. I had a huge king size bed. I said, you're going to sleep in that bed with me every night, because the thing was, is he'd get high downstairs alone or in the bedroom where his brother was sleeping. And I couldn't have that. I had to watch him like a hawk. So I made him sleep in bed with me and we would put on, I have these stargazer light things. You've probably seen them, you know, stars and
like projectors.
Projector. There you go. Right, that's what I'm trying to say. We put that on and we'd watch a movie every night, whatever. And then the next morning on my way to work, I would drop him off at the top of our complex and make him just go like to the library or to Tim, you know, whatever, do something during the day. Go get your treatments at the hospital and then I'll pick you up. And that's sort of how the next couple of weeks that I had him for those last weeks. So on November 26th, that morning, we got up, I got ready for work, jumped in my truck, got to the top of the complex. And it was the weirdest thing because he just looked at me and he said, thanks, Mom. Thank you so much for everything. And I was like, well, of course, like, you're my baby. I love you. I'll do anything for you, you know, kind of thing. And and it was such a nice moment because, you know, we hugged and we said, I love you. And I said, I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I came home after work and my daughter was doing dance that night from 8:30 to 9:30. I took her to dance, and on the way to dance, I said, you know, it's really weird. I haven't heard from your brother yet. Like, he should be done his treatment by now. Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, that is weird. He's usually not this late.
Right.
I picked her up at 9:30 and it was like a 5-minute drive from our house. And at 20 to 10, the phone rang. And I was like, finally, because I looked at my phone, it was the hospital. And I'm like, finally. So I answer and said, hello, expecting it to be him. And this woman said, hello, are you Brad Porter's mom? And I said, yeah. And she goes, oh, okay. She says, yeah, he checked in at 10 to 7 this evening, but I'm sorry to tell you he passed away. Just like that.
Wow.
Just like that.
That's so rude.
And I was like, I can't even explain to you what that moment is like. That is nothing anybody should ever have to endure.
No.
You know, you just drop to your knees and scream like a banshee. Like it was horrible.
Yeah.
I did go and spend time with him after he passed. And you know how he died? When he checked into the hospital, what he did was he checked in, he had bought a piece of pizza and a chocolate milk, I guess to Hal while he was sitting there, but he slipped into the bathroom before he went into the room where they give him the intravenous to get high, and he dropped, smacked his head on the sink. That's what I remember, like, when looking at him after he died, is that mark on his head just, it's etched in my brain. His dead body is just there forever. That's another thing I don't recommend to parents that lose their children. Let somebody else do that. But
yeah,
you know, but then again, I insisted, like, sometimes you have to, you just have to see it for yourself. And I wanted to say goodbye to him. So, but seriously, I don't recommend it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not how you want to remember your kids the last time. That morning should have been my last memory, quite honestly. So mm-hmm. Now, after that, shit went crazy. I know, I just feel it in my heart that when he hit that floor and his spirit left, his soul left, and he looked at himself dead on the floor, the first thing that he probably thought was, my mom is going to kill me. You know, like, my mother is going to literally just lose her shit. And, you know, he was right. So he didn't leave. Now, I could be mistaken about that, too, because they do say that dark entities will show themselves as your loved ones, right? And trick you. I don't believe that. I can't believe that in this case. I have to hang on to what I have in my mind and him being there and waiting for me to actually say, months and months later, for me to actually say, I can't keep doing this to you. I need to let you go, and I want you to go. I want you to be at peace. And I had situations for months where he was showing signs. So I think it was the second night after he died, second or third night after he passed, I woke up. And I rolled over and I opened up my eyes, and there he was sleeping. The back of his head, I could see the back of his head in bed, sleeping. I didn't think anything of it. I just rolled back over. It was like just going back in time. I didn't even remember he had passed, and he was just there. He was sleeping right beside me. He threw out a cachet bag down the stairs. We were all sitting at the dining room table talking about him. And all of a sudden, this cachet bag comes flying down the stairs onto the dining room floor, and a bunch of pills came, the bottles of pills. It was my boyfriend at the time. It was his cachet bag, like just Tylenols and stuff. But I think it was just like, you know, a metaphor, right? Like, here I am. So then my girlfriend came down. She flew down from Thunder Bay. So this is about 5 days later after he passed, maybe a week. After he had passed, it's quite blurry because there was so much going on. And
of course.
And she was getting ready to go back to Thunder Bay. And I had these photos made of him for people to keep. And so me, her, and my boyfriend were all standing at my kitchen counter. And I was looking for cardboard and tape to tape up her pictures to pack in her suitcase. And the pictures were sitting on the kitchen counter, and we're all standing there, and you know, we're talking away or whatever, and I'm looking for the tape. All of a sudden, those pictures slid in front of all three of us about 3 inches towards us, in front of all of us. And wow. I just started screaming, he's here, he's here, he's here, he's here, he's here, and everybody's running around going, what's wrong with her? Like, and of course, Diane and Tim are just standing there, their mouths on the floor, because right in front of us, like, I mean, that's stuff you see in the movies, things sliding across right in front of us. Like, it was crazy, crazy stuff. I remember, you know, people saying, look for the signs, look for dimes, feathers, dragonflies. Well, that just, I mean, it was almost like they were falling right out of the sky. Like, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. My boyfriend and I had a seasonal little getaway trailer place called in Harrison Hot Springs, and it was springtime, so you know, he had been dead for a few months by then, and we went up there to, you know, just to get me away or whatever. And all of a sudden, like, I'm standing outside, and it's really strange because when we drove in, Tim goes, Sherry, look up at the sky. And I looked up at the sky, and it was like, you know, a stream cloud in the shape of a cross.
Wow.
And I was like, and we have a picture of it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. And all of a sudden, this little baby dragonfly landed on my arm. And I'm like, well, oh my goodness, hello there. And that little baby dragonfly sat on his hind legs, started rubbing his other front legs together. And I'm looking at him like I'm like really close looking at this thing. And I can see his mouth moving like he's talking to me and his hands are rubbing and he's looking up at me and his mouth is moving. And I'm like, this is just, this is crazy. And right. All of a sudden he lit up like a glow bug, like a light inside of him.
Wow.
And I don't know of dragonflies doing that.
No.
And so, I mean, this went on for a long time. He just stayed and talked and he glowed a couple of times. And I've had this relationship now with dragonflies. They fly around me all the time. They come right up to me. They land on me. Last year, I had one land on me and it stayed with me for about an hour and a half. I walked all the way around like my neighborhood up to the cemetery. I walk up at the cemetery all the time. And as soon as we got to the cemetery, that's when it flew away, landed on a tombstone or something like that. But yeah, just, wow. You know, all that kind of crazy stuff, dreams, you know.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that makes me feel like he was trying to tell you, because you said you were kind of concerned about his soul for a while, right?
When he first died, I was obsessed about where he went. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Like, where did he go? I was, that drove me. That was the worst part of it, is not knowing.
Yeah.
Not knowing where he is.
So then you see this cross in the sky. And then you see the dragonfly that you have that paranormal experience. I feel like that was his way of telling you that like his soul is okay.
I think personally. So too. I think he totally is okay. I for the longest time, I really didn't. Like I wasn't sure. And I was just, now I know. As a matter of fact, I actually think he could have already been reincarnated. Because the last dream I had of him was of me at these people's house in Vancouver or something somewhere. It was like a mid-century 70s house. I can explain the house. It's got a big living room window and the hardwood floors. And I remember sitting there with all these women, lots of women, all these people. And it was a big celebration because I was there to see my son. In the dream, I knew he had already passed, and I was here now to see him as a baby. And all these people are around, they're all talking, everybody's talking, and it was so exciting, and I was so excited to see him. And here comes this little toddler, maybe about a little over a year old, not perfect on his feet yet. And I just scooped him up, and the feeling is just amazing. Like the love is just so overwhelming. You know, I was so happy to see him. And I remember something wrong with his eyes. He had something wrong with his eyes. And I just kept saying, it's okay. You'll get through that. It's no big deal. I love you so much. And I've been grieving ever since. It's really kicked my grieving in again, like really harshly. I've been incredibly depressed and sad as of late just because of that dream, because I'm like, well, now what? So what now? I'm going to die and he's not going to be there waiting. Like, you know, how I've been envisioning and, you know, manifesting, like he's going to be there waiting. But then, you know, I look into it a little bit and once again, it's like, that's not necessarily true. Even if he has been reincarnated, doesn't mean that you're not going to see him again. So I'm getting there. I'm working on it and you know, whatnot, but it's something else.
Yeah. Because what I've learned, there's so many things like we could unpack and I could tell you, but I think you should start listening to my podcast, not because I'm trying to promote it, but just so that you can like learn from other people.
Absolutely.
But, yeah. Like, you know, time doesn't, it's not the same as it
That's
is
right.
here on the other side.
That's right.
So just because he's reincarnated. Also, some people believe that in different lifetimes, you leave a certain piece of yourself. So even if he's still on the other side, he could have another life and another life and another life.
That's
so,
right. Yeah. That's why I can't really, you know, for me to really get into it and educate myself on it is a little overwhelming for me, because it's like every subject, I'll go down the rabbit hole. There's a rabbit hole and you get really caught up in it. So, you know, basically I just try and, you know, do the manifesting and the affirmations just to keep my head above water and keep me on this planet. I did try to commit suicide after he passed. I'm glad somebody saved me. And I'm still here, because it really would have messed up my other kids. So I, you know, I'm past that kind of feeling. It never really goes away. I mean, there's still times where I feel like I just want to go. I just want to go. My soul just can't take this much sadness. Almost 2 years to the day after Brad passed, my mom passed away.
Oh my gosh.
And I had to see her through that. I had to look after her. Hadn't even really dealt with it. Seemed like, honestly, 2 years later only seemed like 2 weeks to me. I'm still dealing with the death of my son, and now I've got to deal with the death of my mother, and that's a whole story in itself as well. But in any case, you know, I have had dreams of her, and I know they're visitation dreams. I know they are, because I went away to Mexico, and my daughter at the time was maybe 16. And she was like with her first boyfriend kind of thing, the very first boyfriend she ever had. His parents bought him a used car and he had just gotten his license. And I said, do not get into the car with that kid. I do not want you going in that car at all. Don't think about it. You're not to do that. You're going to be in a lot of trouble if I find out you were in that car. I went to Mexico for a couple of weeks, about 3 days before I came home. One of my girlfriend's son overdosed and died. And the same night I had a dream that I was in Vancouver with a couple of friends, and we were standing on Hastings Street, and this old car that my dad used to own actually came barreling down the street and crashed in front of us. And I looked across the street and there was my mother staring at me, just this real serious, solemn staring at me. Also in the dream was this little kid who had an airplane tattooed on his face. And I remember being really upset about somebody tattooing an airplane on the kid's face at 2 years old. So I was scared to get on the plane. I thought it had something, we're going to crash. And, you know, I'm trying to put this dream together. Like, what does this mean? And sure enough, I got home and, my daughter came home and she said, I have something to tell you. And I, please don't get mad. Don't freak out. And I said, what happened? And she said, I did get in the car with Ethan and we were in a car accident and I thought I was going to die. We flipped over upside down into a ravine and I didn't think any of us were going to make it out. And I said, well, you're lucky your grandmother was there, because I'm pretty sure she's the one that made sure you got out, because she came to see me.
Wow.
And yeah. So, I mean, there's so many of these little things that have happened that I could go on and on and on and on.
Girl, I am so grateful that you reached out to me. I think like we should do this again and again.
I would love to anytime.
But I think a couple things, like, I just want to say, like, I feel like you are gifted. I think, you know, you need to start trusting that when you receive these messages that they are real. Maybe something that may help you with your grief is I've learned about the concept of pre-birth planning. Have you heard of that? So it's a concept, it's a theory, right? Like I can't prove it, but people believe that you choose the life that you're going to live.
The contract.
Yes. Your soul contract.
Yeah. Yes. Soul contract. Yeah. So, that.
if you choose to believe that, like, your son may have chosen you to be his mom, and then he may have chosen to go through these issues, and you being his mom, you can live your life helping other people, other mothers, other families. And, you know, I think that there are great things for you going to be coming up in the future. Like, I think if you keep plugging into this, like, you can help a lot of people. And I feel like we're kind of connected, because I didn't tell you much about myself, but I actually just came off of Sublocade like a couple of weeks ago, because I was also addicted to opiates. So it's just like full circle, like the whole time.
And you know what? I was going to say to you as well, I believe this was meant to happen. I believe I was meant to meet you. I was meant for that. Like, this is all happening for a reason. And yeah, I did do some public speaking. I did go to some recovery centers and did some public speaking. And, you know, and I do belong to Mother's Group. I've met so many people that have lost their children. And as a matter of fact, a really good friend of my husband's just lost his third and final boy. You know, they're not just not, you're not losing one child anymore. You're losing another friend of mine lost her 21-year-old son, and 4.5 months later, her 17-year-old daughter. Like, it's just happening so much. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's some kind of a shift, right? Mm-hmm. Just like the pandemic, like, there's a shift happening, and mm-hmm. we're losing all these children. Like, it's a war. Mm-hmm. It's like a war.
I think if I had continued, I would have met the same demise, but I think I just got to this point. Also, like you were saying, like, you know, it's so hard to know what to do with kids that are going through this. You know, do you do the tough love, or do you be there to support them? My mom did both. Like, my mom's actually, she's a retired corrections officer. So had like all the training, because she would deal with clients, right? So she was trying to do that, but then also be my mom and also be a friend, right? Because, you know, we're both females, like, just that kind of connection you have. But I think one of the things that kind of got me on the path to sobriety was she did say, like, you can't come home. And I think, like, at that point, I listened to that for a while, but I just felt like I needed my family to be the support that would take me in. So she did do the tough love, but then she also let me come home. But I think that was like what started me on my recovery journey. And then I just got to a point where I was like, I just knew, like, if I keep doing this, I'm going to die. Cause I was also buying pills off of the street, and you never know, it could be laced with fentanyl. And so I don't know. And since I've decided to get sober, like, my career is taking off. I've lost like 80 pounds. I am doing this podcast. My creativity is back. And like, I just have this drive to keep like looking into anything supernatural and paranormal. And I just kind of want to share that with other people, because I think people have this misconception. I'm not dogging religion, but I was raised as a Christian, and I just never really felt like, it never resonated with me, because it's like, you're either in this box or you go to hell. I don't personally believe that. So I think that, you know, maybe me having this platform to just talk about other ideas and concepts will help other people, because now I'm not afraid of dying, you know? So I think it's just like, it's a calling, I guess you could say.
Exactly. Yeah. I thrive on success stories. You know what I mean? That's, I think now that you're telling me this, this is one of the reasons why I was meant to know you, because there's not enough of them. Mm-hmm. And so I love to hear these kinds of stories. I love success stories. To fight that war, listen, I know how hard it is. Mm-hmm. It's just the hardest thing I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. So for you to be able to do that and to kick it and not let it take you, and now look at what's happening.
Yeah.
Look what's happening. And yes, you get to now share that story and enlighten somebody else. That light bulb is only takes like one little phrase, one little thing that can just trigger somebody and go, oh, like an epiphany almost, you know? And I'm there to support you 100%.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I think this is like kismet. Like we were literally supposed to meet.
Definitely. Yes. I believe that 100%. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I can't wait to chat with you again. And
yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was telling you before, I have some little ghost gadget things or whatever that I haven't quite mastered yet. But maybe the next time we talk, I'll play with those for a while, see if something happens. And
okay, cool. Yeah, I'm going to send you some resources too. I think I know of right now, I'm trying to get this one girl on my show. She was also an addict and she had a near-death experience and she's turned her life around. I've reached out to her a couple times. We've just haven't been able to like get the schedule right, but she was on another podcast. So I'm going to send you that episode. You need to listen to it. And perfect. I also see like you writing a book. Like, I don't know if you've started it, but I think that that's your next step personally.
That's really weird that you say that because, not long after he died, I remember telling people, I'm going to write a book. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write a book. And then I just sort of forgot about that desire, but it's always lingered in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. I should start that book.
I think so. Because the whole time you were talking, I just kept seeing a book. Like, I'm like, she's going to write a book. She's going to help a lot of people. So yeah. I think you should. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start that book.
Okay, perfect. Okay, well, thank you so much for, you know, taking some time out of your day to come talk to me. We are going to talk again.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait. This was fantastic. I so appreciate this. It was great.
So, if you or your friends have a paranormal experience that you would really like to share, please feel free to reach out to me. I do have an email address called somethingparanormalpodcast@gmail.com. You can reach out to me just to let me know you do have something to share, or you can always submit an experience just through email and I can just read your submission. I would like to extend an offer to have a virtual call with you. So you can email me or you can reach out on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. My Facebook account is called Something Paranormal, and my Instagram is Something Paranormal Podcast, and my TikTok is called Something Paranormal Pod. So feel free to follow me on any of those platforms and reach out if there's anything you would like to share. So I hope you guys have a great week, and I'll be back next Sunday night.